This is Museum People, a podcast that celebrates individuals connected with the museum field by highlighting their work, passions, opinions, and personalities. In each episode, you'll hear stories and viewpoints from a variety of museum people, unsung workers to executive directors, volunteers to trustees, as they help change the world one visitor at a time. And now, the hosts of Museum People, Dan Yeager and Marika Van Dam.
Marika, episode two.
Dan.
Wow, this is exhausting and fun. The last one was really fun, though. I love the interviews and stuff. We've got a lot of great stuff ahead of us. Now, listen, moving to our person on the street segment, and for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, we are featuring short vignettes of questions that Marika posed during our museum's advocacy day a while back in Boston. And today's question is, what do you think are the biggest obstacles museums face? And a couple of the questions were, what would you do if you had more resources?
What's your biggest obstacle at your museum?
You laugh. I'm sure that it's the same for everybody. It's the funds. That's everybody's biggest obstacle, I would say, because we have no lack of talent and enthusiasm, but of course the lack of funds will hold us back from time to time. So, yeah.
If you had greater resources, what could you do?
Ooh. Some kind of storage space for artifacts and exhibit space for something that's bigger than will fit in the room of a house.
Tegan, if museums had more money, what could we do?
More of what we're already great at, and more experiments into new ways to reach audiences and new ways to reach different types of audiences or people who aren't yet being really getting the full museum experience because it doesn't work for them yet.
If your museum had more money, what could you do?
We could get more people in because we would have a bigger marketing budget. So we could reach out to more people, and we could offer more programs for underserved communities and for everyone. So people could come and enjoy our amazing 210 acres of beautiful land and learn about the Shakers and the Transcendentalists and the Native Americans and American art.
What are your biggest obstacles?
Our location, I would say, is our biggest obstacle, as well as our name, because people would think that we're for higher education with the name Institute in it. Along with our location, the whole Columbia Point next to JFK Library and the Commonwealth Museum as our neighbors, you have to go through the UMass Boston's campus to get there, so that's another. We have no foot traffic or any retail or restaurants around, but trying to get us out to the point. It's very beautiful. We're on the Harbor Walk.
The biggest challenge, it's a tough question, sorry. I think it's doing what you're doing now, I think, which is learning how to use podcasts and things like that to bring people who aren't at the museum in. Because using digital media is a great way to share who we are, but you want to do it in a way that brings people to us and not in a way that replaces the visit. So that's a big challenge, but an exciting one.
What are your biggest obstacles, or biggest obstacle?
Well, I think we, that's a good question. Yeah, I'm sure that's the typical one. I think preservation is a huge concern for a lot of the organizations here today. Applying for grants, getting these things, so we're really putting our best foot forward for guests. We have a 500,000 visitors every year at Old North from all over the world, and we really want to be showcasing Old North as in a historically accurate light, and making it accessible and things like that are important.
What do you think is the biggest obstacle facing museums?
Relevancy. I think relevancy is very difficult because people really do struggle to connect with things that are behind glass. And I think one of the reasons why my institution, the Douglas Historical Society, is so successful is that we don't have any glass in our museum, and people can just feel the power of the objects right up close. So I'm very interested in finding new ways for people to strongly connect with the power of objects.
If you had greater resources, what could you do for your community?
Well, if we had the resources to be able to do it, I'd like to put together a project where everyone in the community who has archival photos can contribute them to a group exhibition project. And I know there have been those kind of projects before, but everywhere I go in the town, people say, you know, I have all these pictures. What do I do with them? I'm afraid something will happen to them. So the Boston Public Library actually runs a program that helps communities and goes in and looks at what they have, and then I'd like to expand that to, you know, really inviting the, you know, everyone in the community to participate along with the library. This would be like a super partnership power move.
Dan, I thought that was a really interesting question, and I didn't get the responses I thought I would get.
Really? Why is that?
I guess I thought everyone would say, money. We don't have enough money.
First one did.
A lot of people did say that, but some other people, I think, dug a little deeper because, whatever, we all think that we deserve more money, we should be paid more, et cetera, et cetera. We do revolve around money a lot in our field. But I think that ultimately we have to wake up and look in the mirror and ask ourselves a hard question. Do we deserve more money?
Yeah, right.
So I think many places would say, sure, we need more resources. But what exactly are those resources? We need more staff. I think that's true. We need visibility. We need relevancy. We need so many things. It's a complicated question.
What do you think is the biggest obstacle facing museums generally? Or particularly your museum here in Cambridge?
I think that we aren't asking ourselves enough, why are we here? Hmm. Why are we special? Why do we exist? And I got a lot of answers of like, well, Cambridge is really historic.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, well, that's not going to pay the bills, friends.
Yeah.
So I've flipped that around and, you know, started asking harder questions.
Our interview subject today is Laurie Lamar, who's the director of the Institute for American Indian Studies in Western Connecticut. And she and I did a session at the last NEMA conference together on empathy. And that's actually one of the ways in which I met her in the beginning. She did a TED Talk about empathy in museums. And so I thought she'd be a great interview subject. She's very interesting and has a lot of interesting perspectives, especially on the whole subject of Native American culture here in New England and around the United States. So, Laurie Lamar.
My name is Laurie Pastriak Lamar, and I am the executive director at the Institute for American Indian Studies, which is a museum and research center in Washington, Connecticut. I enjoy working museums because of the people. I enjoy speaking with our visitors, speaking with my colleagues, especially research professionals and children, and opening up new pathways for them to learn things that they never thought they would ever find out. We look at regional Native American populations from the past and present, and also work with contemporary Native peoples to help share their stories as well as preserve them.
What I find fascinating is that New England has such a concentration of Native American sites and museums and the like, and yet it seems as though that story is really not fully told. We always hear about the Mayflower and the Pilgrims and the usual, but you know, the sort of pre-colonial era has had such an impact on us. Why do you think that is, and is that changing?
Well, I think that everyone is delivered a sense, you know, in when they're school children, a myth of the Pilgrims and the first Thanksgiving, and you know, what they do miss out is on the untold stories of you know, what really happened with Native populations from the past and all the way to the present. And it's a difficult story to tell because it's not pleasant and it's not pretty. But it is real, and it is something that Native people of today's culture, I think, really want to stress that, number one, yes, we faced all of this adversity, but we are still here. And that's what we hope to really explore at the Institute and open up pathways for people to understand, is that, you know, Native populations are not, and peoples and cultures and traditions are not in the past. They are very much present and today.
But what are the big challenges then at your museum?
The majority of challenges for us have to do with the amount of collections that come into our museum. For anything from farmers who pick up projectile points on their fields, or Native ethnographic items that don't necessarily have the best story behind them, and to make sure that we care and preserve for those in ways that are proper. And, you know, many museums across the U.S., especially across the Northeast, have these collections of Native, you know, projectile points, artifacts from the past, but also things that come from a more 20th, 19th century perspective of Native ethnographic items. And with them comes a series of emotional and cultural sensitivity issues that to make sure that not only visitors are aware of, but your staff as well. So there's a lot of professional development that goes on.
So what sort of issues are there?
Well, there's always, of course, NAGPRA, the Native American Graves Repatriation Act. And so there's understanding all of that that goes along with cultural sensitivity, and also of understanding who and what owned these items, and make sure that the story that you are telling with these items, if you wish to share them and it's appropriate to share them, are authentic and that they are compelling and it is appropriate to do. That is something that, you know, because there are so many different Native traditions and there are so many diverse cultures and stories, to make sure that they are authentic to the item that you choose to display. So it's very important not to talk about a cultural creation story from the Northeast and display something from the Plains, for example, from cultures from the Plains. There are two different stories, and there are two different peoples and traditions and cultures, and it's really appropriate to share them in the right way.
Do you face any particular challenges because you're a non-Native as a director of a Native American museum?
Yes. You know, there is a constant, you know, I don't know if it's a particular struggle, but I think this is for museums as a whole, is the authenticity piece. We are expected to be real. People come to us for, you know, information, for research, and to make sure that we are continuing to be authentic in our stories. But as a non-Native who leads a Native museum and a non-associated tribal museum, we are not associated with one particular tribe in Connecticut or across the Northeast. It's challenging in a way that, you know, we want to be open to all of the traditions and cultures and diversity, but in order for us to be open, that the people coming to us have to be open as well, that they really need to open their eyes and their minds and understand that not every worldview is the same. So there is a push for our staff to understand what empathy means, as well as for our visitors to learn a little bit on perspective taking and, you know, diversity and understanding.
You have emerged fairly quickly into the leadership ranks of the museum field. You've been at IAIS for a year, and this is your first director's position. Is there any particular surprise about museum leadership that you want to share with us, or is it all been kind of planned out for you?
There's no plan, I will tell you that. It's one thing that surprised me was how quickly you need to jump from one subject to the other and be prepared for it. I never used to be big on preparing for things. You know, I was not able to wing it per se, but I had enough knowledge in my base to be able to talk about any lecture or activity that was going on. But now I really need to spend the time and make the time to prepare myself to discuss things that maybe I'm not so well versed on. So the self-learning that goes on and the self-awareness of being able to say, you know what, I don't know. Not to be able to give an answer is okay. and being all right with that, I think, is where the surprises have led me. Every day is something new, which always comes up in museums and museum work, but really being okay with saying, I don't know, and I'm going to learn about it, and I'll find out for the future for you.
Do you have any particular thoughts, pointers, pep talk, whatever, for folks that might want to be directors that might be helpful as they start thinking, can I envision myself in this role?
I would have to suggest that coming to work, positivity, you know, walk in the door with a smile on your face every morning, be glad to be there, because working in a museum is a special opportunity. Not every day do you get to do the things that you do in a museum for the reason of being there. It's not necessarily about you. It's not about yourself. It's about the place that you're working for and the reason why you're there, and what they do. And do you share that value? But for me, it's really kind of walking in the door and saying, this is going to be a great day. It's going to be fun. And this is what we're going to get to do today because we're lucky to do it. So, you know, that positivity and the value and sharing the values with where you work is very important.
Last question. Where do you think museums in general are going to be winding up, say, in 10, 15 years? What's the prognosis and outlook for museums?
I think museums are shifting from an educational place, or I guess I hope from my perspective, they're shifting from education to being more of social leaders. I think museums are going to need to find their place there because we are in danger of becoming something of the past. And in order to stay with it, we have to stay present. And that means getting involved in our communities more. That means collaborating more with other organizations, maybe even outside of nonprofits, more with our local libraries, more with social services, health. I think those are things that are going to come up more and more in our communities, and they need to be contemporary, and museums need to just stay with it.
Thank you, Laurie. It's been a terrific opportunity to get to know you a little bit better and hear about your experiences in the museum community. Good luck.
Thanks.
What a great interview, Dan. I loved Laurie. I loved her answer of positivity. She's a lady I'd like to work for.
Yeah, she brings a little joy to her museum, I think.
I love it.
There we are.
We love you, museum people.
Yeah. Stay tuned. Episode 3 coming your way shortly. It's been a lot of fun.
Don't forget to...
Oh, yes.
Tweet.
Yes.
And Facebook.
Yes.
And are there other ways?
Hashtag museum people is our
airplanes, paper airplanes.
Yes. Let us know how we're doing.
Message in a bottle. We care what you think.
Yeah. Thanks. See you next time.
Next time on Museum People.
Art is just, and culture is just as important as anything else in education.
My personal fear is that technology is going to take more and more of our interest away from primary source material.
You can keep visiting a museum regularly and get something new every time, because you have changed and the museum has evolved.
Museum People is a production of the New England Museum Association, which connects, inspires, and empowers cultural institutions to provide their communities with deep and authentic experiences. Have an idea or comment for Museum People? Go to nemanet.org/museumpeople to provide feedback, get information about episodes, and learn how to subscribe. Thanks for listening.